Hello, I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and welcome to Health Matters on Red River Radio. Happy Thanksgiving! The holiday season is upon us, and for many people, the holidays can be a challenging time to maintain healthy eating and exercise habits. For the next hour, we will be discussing ways that we can all enjoy the holiday season without putting on those extra pounds or losing track of our fitness goals. Joining us tonight, we welcome Jennifer Utley, clinical dietitian with the Willis-Knighton Healthcare System, and Libby Burkhalter, personal trainer and group exercise specialist here in Shreveport. This is a pre-recorded special edition of Health Matters on Red River Radio. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us tonight. The holidays are a very special time. Getting together with family usually means celebrating a special event with family and friends, but also means food. What does that mean in terms of gaining weight? Is it a time where people gain weight?
Well, surprisingly, research does show that we do gain weight, but it's not as much as we tend to think. From the period of mid-November to the beginning of January, we tend to gain a little bit less than 1 pound, so not a whole lot. The issue with that is we don't tend to lose the weight, so it kind of creeps up on us. If you look at it over years, 5, 10 years, you're gaining 5 to 10 pounds if you haven't done anything about it. So it can be an issue over time.
And in people who have difficulty overeating over the holiday period, is there something in particular that you would recommend that they focus on when they're planning their meals?
Well, there's a couple things you can do. Of course, you can kind of modify the old family favorites, the recipes that we tend to enjoy. You can choose healthier things. An example would be having your turkey and maybe taking the skin off or not deep frying it if you tend to do that. That will just kind of save some fat. Also, if you want an extra meat, if you have issues with maybe blood pressure issues, you could choose more maybe a fish option instead of ham, because ham tends to be high in fat and high in sodium. There are a lot of different other things that we can do, like for side dishes. Those tend to be very heavily starches, our sweet potato casserole, our macaroni and cheese, all the rolls and biscuits and different things. So kind of focusing on more of the non-starchy vegetables like greens, spinach, carrots, also squash, I was thinking. That's a really good one that we like to do in the fall. Maybe in kind of de-emphasizing those starchy foods. Of course, whenever you do cook those starchy foods, you could do more like a sweet potato instead of just a white rice, or do brown rice instead of that. There's a lot of different options. With like desserts, we tend to like a lot of desserts at the holiday time. Maybe choosing healthier options with that, which would be like a sweet potato pie or a carrot pie, because sweet potato or pumpkin, of course, pumpkin. That's giving you kind of the good nutrients like beta carotene, which is an antioxidant. So it kind of helps prevent chronic diseases. So you're getting a little bit of that instead of choosing maybe like a pecan pie, which is really high in fat, really high in sugar. Of course, you can still have pecans because that's a good holiday food, but maybe putting it in the oven with a little bit of cinnamon spice and maybe a little bit of sugar. So there's a lot of different things we can do to kind of cut down the fat, different things like that.
Those sound like some really good ideas. Let's talk more about those in just a few minutes. Libby, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Sure. Glad to be here.
You know, a lot of people think about, okay, after I've put on these pounds in the holiday season, now it's time to think about exercise. Is that the right way to go about it? Go ahead and let a few, you know, extra pounds accumulate during the holidays and then maybe join the gym at the beginning of the year?
Well, sure. That's a great way. A lot of people will put off starting an exercise program because they don't think they have time, or they're too busy, or I'll just procrastinate and I'll wait till after the holidays. I'll just eat everything I want and then I'll start fresh, when in fact, right now is a perfect time to start exercising. It doesn't have to be very difficult or stressful. It can be just taking a walk. You know, for the family time, everybody's getting together before Thanksgiving. There's so many opportunities to just get outside a little bit, even if the weather's a little bit cool. I mean, taking a walk before your Thanksgiving meal, there's opportunities locally. The Turkey Trot is available. You don't have to be a runner. You can be a walker and participate in a fun activity. So you don't have to wait till the beginning of the year. I encourage people to start now. There's special classes offered. I know Willis Knighton has some classes that people can go ahead and take a guest pass and try something new to see what they want to get involved in at the beginning of the year. So I wouldn't wait. I'd go ahead and get active.
Thank you so much. This is a pre-recorded edition of Health Matters on Red River Radio. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and our topic tonight is diet and exercise over the holidays. Joining us tonight, we have Jennifer Utley, a clinical dietitian with the Willis Knighton Health System, and Libby Burkhalter, personal trainer and group exercise specialist. Jenny, let's get back to the holiday diet again. You're mentioning, you know, some good foods versus some foods that are maybe more processed or more you know, fattening, so to speak, or higher density calories. What particular vegetables would you say are preferred versus maybe some starches that you would say stay away from?
Well, of course, all the non-starchy vegetables, I mean, they are just really low in calories. They're high in fiber. They have all the vitamins and minerals, phytochemicals, antioxidants, which are just good things that our body needs. The non-starchy vegetables are any sort of greens, leafy vegetables like a salad, anything you would put like tomatoes, squash, carrots are even considered one. So it's just we want a plentiful variety of the different colors, the dark greens, the reds, the oranges, tomatoes, bell peppers. Not that the starchy vegetables are bad, it's just that we kind of need to de-emphasize those because we tend to have on our holiday meals a lot of meat and then a lot of starch and a lot of dessert. So you can still have that, but it's just kind of putting more of an emphasis on those non-starchy vegetables so you can kind of feel fuller quicker.
And so one approach that I was reading that you and I were discussing was maybe putting the higher portions of the better foods on your plate first, so maybe larger portions of the better foods and smaller portions of the foods that may be higher density in calories. Is that an approach that you would recommend?
Yes, and I actually do tend to do that a lot. You know, if you're going to a holiday party, sometimes you can't make the modifications. You can't kind of take the recipe and make it healthier. Maybe grandma likes to do it her way. So when it's that situation, you could do what the government does. It's kind of like the old pyramid and different things, but now it's a plate. So it's kind of a visualization tool where you're taking half of the plate, putting non-starchy vegetables on one half. So that gives you that fullness and all that fiber. And then breaking the plate into a quarter for your starchy. So if you want a roll or if you wanted maybe sweet potato or something. And then the other quarter would be your turkey or your meat, your protein version. So it's just kind of an easy way to portion size, portion control.
Another issue that a lot of times will come up is that, you know, a lot of people will bring food in. I guess we call it potluck. And so we want to try a little bit of what everyone brings. We don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. So how do you recommend navigating that scenario?
Okay, well, one thing you should always remember, because it is kind of an emotional thing, people will cook and bake and, you know, they want you to try everything. But for if you really aren't hungry and really don't want to try anything, it's not rude to say, hey, I'm full, maybe later. But if there is a lot of different dishes that you want to try, you can try them. Maybe just putting a little spoon full of this and that on the plate. So you get a taste for it, but you're not consuming full portion sizes of everything because that could tend to add up.
Libby, when we're talking about getting going with exercise, especially, you know, during the winter months, you know, some of the folks that have issues with, you know, trying to lose weight, there may be some arthritis involved and some pain issues involved. What is the best way to get started with an exercise program if you're fairly new to it and maybe a little bit more advanced in terms of not being in great shape?
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, you want to check with your physician and make sure that it's okay for you to start an exercise program. And then there's lots of avenues to help support you and give you the help that you need to make sure you're doing the right exercise program. You can hire a personal trainer. A lot of the fitness centers provide great exercise specialists to help you with your exercise program. For example, if you suffer arthritis or have some existing conditions that you need to be careful with, you want to work with a specialist so that you're doing the right type of exercise so you don't hurt yourself and that you will feel good too. There's always a water program for people that have chronic joint issues, things like that, or maybe they need a low impact program, a bicycle, elliptical trainer, and not a high intensity program. There's strength training, there's all types of different exercises and classes that are available, but you want to start slow and progress in your intensity in an easy manner so that you don't overdo it. I find a lot of times during the holiday season, everybody's like gung-ho, oh, I overate, so now I'm going to go kill my workout and make up for lost time. So they end up overdoing the exercise, and they'll either burn out or have an injury, and then that keeps them from sustaining exercise on a consistent basis, which defeats the goal, is regular exercise to feel good and healthy.
A number of our listeners may live out, in the country, so to speak, and may have some issues with, getting to a gym at least, three or four times a week. How do you recommend getting started maybe on your own in terms of starting some exercise? Let's say, someone goes to their family physician, they get a clean bill of health, so to speak. It's okay for them to start some light or moderate exercise. How does one do it on their own? Do you recommend maybe doing it with a partner, someone that they can partner up with?
Sure, there's lots of ways. You can get a friend or neighbor, start a buddy system. I run accountability groups for fitness and nutrition challenges online. There's that avenue that's available. It's free to go walking outside. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to belong to a facility. You can also use your own body weight for strength exercises and progress to using weights. So those things are easy to do at home. For instructional, there's home workout programs that are very successful, and asking a trainer, someone expert in exercise, to recommend the best program for you to get started with. There's lots of those available to you. So it doesn't cost you anything to get started. You can work out at home, be very successful with that, and increase your stamina, your endurance, cardiovascularly, your muscular strength and endurance, all while you're at home using the couch. There's a whole exercise program I can give you on a couch that keeps you, maybe active while you're watching some of those football games.
Is there a particular website that you would recommend that our listeners maybe go to get some ideas about what they can do on their own?
Sure. If they want to email me, I would be glad to answer any of those questions for them. You want me to give you?
That'd be great.
Sure. My email is libfit@gmail.com. That's libfit@gmail.com. And if you have any questions or need some recommendations for some exercise programs that you can do at home, I'm happy to help you with that.
This is Health Matters on Red River Radio. It's a special edition, a holiday edition. We're talking about diet and exercise over the holidays. I'm your host, Dr. Randall Brewer, and our guests tonight are Jennifer Utley, a clinical dietitian with the Willis-Knighton Healthcare System, and Libby Burkhalter, personal exercise trainer and group exercise specialist here in Shreveport. Jenny, we've been talking a little bit about, how to avoid excessive weight gain during the holidays, and I had a couple of questions that were submitted ahead of time. One of the questions was, is there a healthy or healthier substitute to adding butter to recipes?
Well, of course, it kind of depends on what your goal is. If it is weight, then there's a lot of options. If you're just trying to, not have your food stick to the pan, there's a lot of different spray options, which are pretty low in calories with the amount that we actually use. So just for that nonstick purpose. For heart health, butter tends to be high in saturated fat, which that's that kind of unhealthy fat or the less healthy fat. Unsaturated fats are the ones that we would like to do more of. So that would be your olive oil, canola oil, different things. So if you are wanting to use that, I like to use as the substitute, you know, an exact substitute for butter, Smart Balance, Benecol. They have more of those heart healthy components in it, but they still look like butter. They act like butter. So those could be a good option. It kind of just depends on what you're looking for.
And so I understand there's almost like a good fat and a bad fat. And so maybe another question actually that was submitted was, you know, what is the difference between a good fat and a bad fat? And so from what you're saying, a bad fat may be one that's saturated and a good fat is one that's not saturated.
Right. Well, there's several types of fats. The main ones we do talk about, bad fats would be saturated fat, which is basically animal fat. That's what we get, you know, if you see the marbling in steak or the fat on the side of it, the skin on the chicken, that's that saturated fat. And why it's bad is because we have several different types of cholesterol in our body, but it basically will raise our bad cholesterol, and it does also raise our good cholesterol. So it is bad. There's a really, really bad fat called trans fat. That's that kind of man-made fat. Tends to be in some margarines. It's actually in a lot of products, but that's a really bad fat because it not only raises our bad cholesterol, but it also lowers our good one. So that one's kind of the worst one that I like to stay away from. The good fats, those are our unsaturated fats, so monounsaturated fats, which are the olive, canola oil, polyunsaturated, which are nuts, seeds, vegetable oils, and then omega-3 fatty acids, which is in tuna, salmon, walnuts, flaxseed, different things like that. And that tends to have a positive effect on our lipid profile. So it's really good for us.
Another question that was actually submitted along those same lines, looking at another category, is carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. Are there good carbs and are there bad carbs? And how do we know which is a good carb and which is not a good carb?
Well, carbs do tend to kind of get a bad rap in general. But if you think about it, fruits are carbs. So if I were to say, oh, what's a good carb? Well, fruits are great because not only do they have those vitamins and minerals that they need, that we need, but they also have those good disease-fighting components like phytochemicals and antioxidants. So that's definitely a good carb. The ones that tend to be the bad ones are more of the refined grains, so the white rice, the not always white bread, because they do add a lot of stuff back into it. But basically, when they're refining something, they're taking off the bran, that outer shell that has all that fiber and the different vitamins and minerals, and it's kind of polishing it. And so it's not as nutrient dense for us. So not considered as healthy. Everything in moderation, but we do tend to eat a very high carb diet, and we tend to be overweight as well. So they're not all bad. Basically.
Libby, when you talk to people who are exercising, they talk about how they manage their carbohydrates quite a bit. Is that really important if one is on a regular exercise program to watch their carbohydrate intake fairly closely in terms of how they time their carbohydrate intake to their exercise program?
Yes, it is important because it depends on the person's activity level. If they're an athlete preparing for an event, say a race, or if it's just your average person that is exercising regularly, even having a pre-workout snack, which would be a good combination of carbohydrate and protein so that it sustains you, gives you the energy you need throughout your workout, is important. So timing can be important depending on the event, the amount of exercise, the intensity of the exercise. It's really kind of individualized.
Do you find that people try to tackle a lot of goals sort of at the same time? Let's say they're going to go on a severely carbohydrate restricted diet and they're going to, you know, go ahead and get started with an aggressive exercise program all at the same time. So they're trying maybe to limit their carbs, but they only want to, you know, maybe take in carbs when they absolutely need them. Do you see that as a recipe for success, or is that something that can be, you know, destructive if you don't watch what you're doing with it?
Well, it can be counterproductive.
Right.
And the reason is I'm not a fan of a low carbohydrate diet because we need carbohydrates for energy. And so if you're going to incorporate exercise into your regime, then you need to have carbohydrates, but it it needs to be the right type of carbohydrates, like Jenny was talking about, the complex carbohydrates that are going to give you the fuel and energy that you need for your activity. Restricting your carbohydrates will leave you a little bit lethargic and not have the energy that you need to do the exercise you want to do.
Again, this is a pre-recorded Health Matters here on Red River Radio. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and our topic tonight is diet and exercise over the holidays. With us tonight, our guest, Jennifer Utley, dietitian with the Willis-Knighton Healthcare System, and Libby Burkhalter, personal trainer and group exercise specialist here in Shreveport. Jenny, going into a little bit more detail in terms of our food groups, we talked about, you know, more processed foods versus, you know, eating foods that are more prepared at home that maybe aren't processed, good carbohydrates versus bad carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates. What do you recommend in terms of ways of having a healthy dessert? Because all of us like to enjoy a little bit of dessert around the holiday times.
Right. Well, you know, it kind of could go either way. You can either have something that's the real thing, the full fat, the full sugar option, and just maybe eat a little bit less of it. So you're kind of conserving your calories. Some people don't want to modify their desserts. But if you do that, then just have maybe a sliver of a piece of pie or several different options, but just small amounts. So you're still getting a taste for it, but you're not going crazy and kind of blowing your food budget. If you just want something sweet and kind of that's healthy, a fruit salad, of course, will always be very good for you. It gives you that kind of sweetness that you may be expecting at the end of the meal, but it's also, of course, a healthier option compared to the full fat cakes and pies that we tend to eat. As I mentioned earlier, a grape, you know, if you option, if you will, would be like more of a pumpkin pie or a sweet potato pie, because it does have good things in it, but it's still that sweet stuff that we tend to crave.
You think maybe setting limits ahead of time, you know, before you walk into the dining room or walk into grandma's house about, okay, this is what I'm going to do today in terms of my diet management, and perhaps limit, you know, the dessert trip to once and not twice, or right, or more than two times to the dessert table and things along those lines.
Right. Well, I think it's always important to have a plan. If you just kind of go somewhere and just are thrown into it, I mean, you know, there's no telling what you will eat or what you won't eat. So if you kind of beforehand say, okay, well, I'm gonna divide my plate. I'm gonna have just one, you know, plate. I'm gonna have my turkey, a little bit of the stuffing or dressing, and then my big salad with that, so I still get a taste for it. And then I'm gonna have maybe a small piece of that chocolate pie that I've been craving. I mean, of course, that will definitely help you if you kind of visualize it and plan it before time, so you can kind of know what you're gonna do. Definitely could be beneficial.
And another thing I think that happens is, you know, we eat and then stuff is sort of left out.
Oh yeah.
And so how do we deal with that? What should we do when we feel like we have had what we need to have for the day?
Right. Well, one great kind of a behavior modification that you can do is have whatever meal, all the different food options and in the kitchen, maybe on the counter or somewhere away from the table. Because when we tend to have all of the good food on the table, we're sitting there and we're talking to our family. We lose track of time and we just fill up our plate, and everybody else is doing it. So we just kind of get one more taste of that, whatever it is. And so if you do have it kind of away, you have to you know, make a conscious decision to get up and actually refill your plate. So that can help if you kind of keep it away from the table.
And, you know, going in with the plan, another idea I think you mentioned was not eating fast.
Right. Oh, that can definitely help. We tend to eat very quick in society. I mean, we get a lot of fast food. We have short breaks or we want to do other things. So we tend to gobble, no pun intended, our food down. And so if we kind of take our time and slow down, we can really pay attention to our hunger and satiety cues. And what that is basically, are you feeling full? And when you start to feel that sensation, which a lot of us have kind of lost touch with that sensation, but when you start to feel that, you can kind of put your plate up and you're done. So really taking your time and maybe look around the room if there's a lot of people. There's always going to be some aunt or someone who eats very slowly. Try to keep pace with them. It can be kind of like a game in your mind. So you are actually slowing down, taking breaks, putting your fork down, chewing, you know, a certain number of times, drinking water, doing different things to kind of delay that. So you can kind of feel that fullness.
Do people who eat faster tend to be more likely overweight?
There is a kind of a correlation between eating quickly and gaining weight because we don't feel that satiety cue. And so you tend to eat more than what you would.
One recommendation I heard recently, actually on NPR, of course, that's where a lot of good information comes from, at least in my life, is eating with your non-dominant hand. And so maybe trying to get those spaghetti noodles into your mouth with your left hand, or if you're right-handed like me, might, you know, save a few calories here and there.
Good idea. That really is.
Again, you know, having a plan, I think, is important. What about with leftovers? I had a couple of questions. Are there any good ideas in terms of how to manage some of the leftovers after the dinner?
Well, you could be a really, really great family member and tell everyone to take your food home, and they will be happy. You can tell them to give it to the children or eat on that for a few days. So it kind of gets it out of your life, and you push it onto them. But if you want to keep that food and have it for leftovers, because leftovers tend to always be so good, keeping it kind of put in maybe a container that you can't see, maybe not having plastic, putting it under foil, something that you kind of not forget about it, because you never forget about it, but it, when you open the fridge, it won't just be there and you look at it and you want it. So kind of hiding it a little bit, maybe putting those tempting things at the back of the refrigerator or somewhere that it's a little bit more difficult to reach. So if you are craving something, you can ask yourself, am I really hungry? Am I really craving this? And if you are, maybe have a piece. But if you're not, then, you know, go do something else, some sort of activity.
Again, this is a pre-recorded Health Matters on Red River Radio. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and our guests tonight are Jennifer Utley, a clinical dietitian with the Willis-Knighton Health System, and Libby Burkhalter, a personal fitness trainer and group exercise trainer as well. Libby, the holiday season is busy. You know, time for exercise is going to be really, really limited for many people. Do you have some recommendations for people to sort of get moving when they don't have that, you know, 3 to 5 hours during their week to, you know, to work off the extra calories?
Well, definitely. I think when you mentioned having a plan for your food program, you need to have a plan for your exercise program as well. And one thing you can start is schedule your exercise into your calendar, just like an appointment. And if you're short on time, which a lot of us run into during the holiday season, we're busy with all kinds of extra activities, that know that your exercise program doesn't have to be your full hour. You could shorten it or do it in and say 10-minute segments 3 times a day. If you have 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes at lunch, and 10 minutes in the afternoon after work, take a walk. You can incorporate exercise that way instead of maybe your normal hour-long strength training or cardiovascular fitness routine that you normally do. And if you're just getting going, just incorporating 10 minutes of activity is so important just to keep you going, keeping your energy up. And if you're trying to incorporate more daily activity into your life, for example, instead of using the escalator or the elevator, take the stairs. When you go to the grocery shopping, which I know everybody's got to do, park as far away from the grocery store or the mall that you can, so you include more steps in your day. I shoot for 10,000 steps a day, which is equal to about 5 miles. So if I'm staying on track with that, it's really easy for me to know that I'm getting the right amount of exercise in, just incorporating daily activities.
Another question that we had submitted before the show that is sort of related to that is, you know, how can you boost your metabolism before and after a meal? Is walking effective with that?
Well, definitely. I'm going to make sure I get my exercise in before my Thanksgiving meal. For one thing, it makes me feel good about myself, boosts my self-esteem, self-confidence. And then I know that that will help me choose maybe healthier foods, because I don't want to overeat. And so I'm going to choose the right foods for my plate and still enjoy some of the special foods that we like to have at the holiday season. So exercising before or after would be a great way, especially afterwards. If you get a walk or some type of exercise in, it's going to keep you from being as lethargic, sitting on the couch watching the football games and becoming a couch potato the rest of the day.
And also, it'll actually take you away from where the food is.
Yeah.
If you actually leave the
give
space
you a distraction.
That the food is. Exactly. A number of traditional holiday foods are filled with calories. And another question that we had was, are there some that should be completely avoided and others that we should, you know, gravitate towards? Jenny, do you have any ideas about that?
Well, I hate whenever people just avoid something. When we want to lose weight, we will just say, oh, I'm not going to eat any of that. And what tends to happen is we're okay for a little while, but then we start to really crave it and overeat. So I always like to say everything in moderation. If there is something that you really are craving, have a piece of it. Maybe not a very large piece if it is something that's very indulgent. But having that taste can kind of satisfy your cravings a little bit. If you are kind of watching your portion sizes and dividing half of your plate and having those non-starchy vegetables, you're already going to be eating a well-balanced diet. So I don't personally like to avoid anything, because I know I have a sweet tooth, and if I say I'm not going to eat any cookies or cake at Thanksgiving, I'll want them, and then I will eventually get them, probably more than I should.
Yeah, I think there's a scenario that I've created in my head anyway on a number of occasions, and I think I probably fail most of the time, is that I'll skip a few meals, you know, a day or two ahead of time before Thanksgiving, thinking that, you know, I'm going to, you know, be able to maybe have, you know, better control, right. But I walk in there and I am starving.
So yeah, saving up those calories.
And is that a recipe for success or not?
Well, actually, some people, it may work for them. Some people can kind of go a long time without eating, and then they have their one plate, and then they're fine. I tend to notice that people do when they become ravenous, when they deny themselves and say, I'm not going to eat all day, and then go and eat that big dinner at Thanksgiving, tend to eat a lot more than maybe they would have if they were kind of eating throughout the day. So it just kind of depends on you. Everyone knows themselves the best, but I definitely wouldn't recommend trying to go without, because when we think of Thanksgiving or Christmas or any of the holidays as kind of a cheat day just to kind of go all out and eat everything, you know, it is kind of a recipe for disaster.
Libby, another question that I had regarding exercise actually was, you know, plateau effect in exercise. And I know this may be a little bit more advanced, but I think it's a really good question is, you know, how effective is actually varying the types of workouts that someone does in terms of like gaining overall complete fitness, maybe changes in intensity or duration or types of exercise? Is that helpful long term?
Oh, definitely. You know, a lot of times I'll see people come to the gym and they do the same routine over and over again, expecting different results, and we call that insanity.
Isn't there an exercise program?
Yes,
called
there is a great exercise and program called Insanity.
But that's not what you're.
But
talking
that's
about.
Not what I'm referring to.
Okay.
So you really do. Your body gets used to doing the same thing, and in order to change the results that you want, you need to change your program. So it may be varying the intensity of the exercise. It might be the volume of the exercise, how many repetitions you do, how many sets you do, the order of the exercise. There's lots of ways to change your program to challenge your body in a whole different way. A thing that's really popular right now is high intensity training, which is not appropriate for everyone, but those that have been exercising, it can be a great way to get off of a plateau. And you can do high intensity training lots of ways. You can alternate intervals of cardiovascular fitness with strength training. You can alternate bouts of cardiovascular fitness, a high intensity versus a low intensity move, or say you're on the treadmill, you can ramp up your your speed and then slow down your speed in different intervals. Same thing, you could apply that on a bike or an elliptical trainer. So high intensity exercise is a popular way to get off of a plateau. You can make that appropriate for different fitness levels so that everyone can be challenged at the appropriate level.
And in terms of exercise and weight loss, you know, I think it's common to believe that the way to really lose weight is through exercise and a diet at the same time. But, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it's now being increasingly known that, you know, an exercise program is really beneficial for health in general and not necessarily just for weight loss, or may not even result in weight loss. And so really setting your fitness goal separate maybe from your weight goal is something maybe to think about as well, right?
Definitely. And, you know, a lot of people focus on the skinny or the numbers on the scale,
right,
when we really need to focus on our health, right, first, and then the weight will take care of itself. You know, I think if we have our fitness goals in mind and focus on, I want to reduce my high blood pressure or lower my cholesterol numbers, you know, that's going to be accomplished through a good exercise program and a sound nutrition program. I've always said you can make abs in the kitchen. It's, you know, nutrition is 90% of having a healthy lifestyle. And as much as I like to exercise, it comes back to nutrition. You cannot outrun a bad diet. So I've tried. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But if you eat right and you exercise regularly, you can accomplish your goals.
Now, is it true that exercise can actually result in weight gain? And is it actually potentially a myth that most of that weight gain is muscle?
Well, it depends on the person. Some people, while they're engaged in a strength training routine or depending on the type of exercise program they're doing, they can gain weight. And sometimes people eat more when they start an exercise program. So if they're being mindful about their nutrition along with their exercise, they should be fine. If they notice a weight gain in their exercise while they're beginning the exercise program, we should take a look at what they're doing to exercise and see if we can adjust their program there, and also how they're eating to see if that is affecting their weight gain.
So, Jenny, when someone comes to you and let's say they're, you know, 20 or 30 pounds overweight and they want to design a plan that's comprehensive in terms of getting started, let's say we're looking at, you know, after the beginning of the year and a lot of people are looking at, you know, trying to get some of those extra pounds off, where do you recommend they start? With their diet or with exercise, both at the same time?
Definitely diet. From what I've read, exercise, I mean, obviously is very important, but that's the most important at that maintenance stage, which is crucial because we all can kind of lose weight, but maintaining it's the difficult part. So initially, if they do come to me, we'll go over their diet and they'll give me a record of what they do tend to eat because we're all different and we can't necessarily give everyone the same diet because depending on their work schedule or their eating, the times that they eat, it just all varies. So looking at their diet over two, three days, maybe a weekend day to kind of, because that usually tends to be a different way we eat, and looking at it and seeing if there are maybe some lower calorie options that we can substitute or different variations of things that we can do to kind of cut those, not necessarily just calories, because it's not just about calories, but different things that we can do to kind of help us get that weight loss. And also making goals, those are so important. So if there were something that they want to start working on, writing that down, 2 to 3 goals, so it's not overwhelming, so they can start implementing that, and then coming back in a week or two and checking to see where we are. Did we even make any progress? If not, where did we go wrong? And then kind of going back to the board and looking and seeing where we can kind of improve.
So maybe starting with a food diary, mm-hmm, and actually recording what it is you're eating. And then going through that, and do you recommend counting calories once someone gets started?
Well, it's like everything, it depends. Some people have kind of can get an obsession with counting calories, so it's not always the best option. Some people do enjoy that, and it keeps them accountable, so that can be beneficial. But looking at the overall diet and then seeing where we can improve if it's a small goal. Some people just want to make a goal, okay, I'm not going to drink any more Coke at all. And just by doing that one simple thing, not even changing their diet, they can lose weight. So it kind of depends on the person, but counting calories can be beneficial for some people. Weight Watchers is a great diet and they do points, but some people kind of will rebel against that if it's too regimented.
So is there really a lifestyle change that has to occur to keep the weight off? Is that what,
oh, definitely.
Is that what I'm getting?
Oh, yes. Definitely a lifestyle change. It has to be, because what we tend to see is people will yo-yo diet. They will get on that, it's the new year, I'm going to lose 20 pounds this year. And then they'll do it. They'll lose that 20 pounds, and then they'll go back to the way they did it before, and they'll gain it back. And what research does suggest is that people that tend to yo-yo diet, go up and down in weight, it gets more difficult to lose weight, and it gets easier to put that weight back on. So it has to be a lifestyle change for it to stick, and that's what we all want.
This is a special edition of Health Matters on Red River Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Randall Brewer, and our topic tonight is diet and exercise during the holidays. With us, we have Jennifer Utley, a clinical dietitian with the Willis-Knighton Health System, and Libby Burkhalter, personal fitness trainer and group exercise specialist as well. Libby, group exercise is really, really cool to me. It seems like you see people who are in the gym, and there's a social aspect to it. There's obviously different intensities of exercise. Talk to me a little bit about what your thoughts are with group exercise, and when should someone consider a group exercise program in their plan?
Sure. Group exercise is a fabulous way to get in shape, have a support system, accountability with an exercise program. I find people that are new to exercise a lot of times feel maybe intimidated to come into a group setting. So they may prefer a one-on-one exercise program with a personal trainer or a specialist to help them get started and gain confidence. I work with clients one-on-one, and their goal eventually is to move into a group setting, but they have maybe never participated in a group exercise program, so they don't know what to expect. They're afraid that they can't do it, and it might be too hard. So that getting in the right class is really important, so that they feel confident and can feel that they have accomplished something and will want to come back. Choosing the right class, the right instructor, the modality of exercise is so important for all of those.
Are there particular age groups that tend to gravitate towards certain programs better than others? Let's say, like, I think there's maybe a Silver Sneakers program for older individuals, and there are specific classes maybe for people who have arthritis problems, or maybe women who are pregnant. There are different exercise programs. So we can really encourage people to look at their individual needs, right?
Yeah, that's what's really nice. Over the years, exercise has really become more specialized, which is nice. It allows us for different ages, different abilities and needs to have a class that will fit them. For example, water exercise is great for people that need something easy on their joints, or chair exercise, or a yoga class for mind-body, or Pilates. So depending on that person's needs and abilities, we can gear them so that they feel confident and will do well in that environment.
In particular, I understand that a number of people will have these really high-intensity training groups, and they may be training for eventual fitness programs like maybe a marathon or a triathlon, things along those lines. How do people, let's say, who are getting started with exercise, identify what's going to be best for them if they want to go into the competitive realm?
If they want to go into a competitive realm, they need to make sure that the training or the group that they're joining is highly trained, specific for that event. You don't want, if you're going to train for a marathon, maybe a boot camp class might be really great for you overall, but it's not specific to the event that you need to train for. So you need a running coach or a running group to help you with something specific.
And when does someone actually know if they need to have a personal trainer or not?
I think that is a personal preference. Some people really enjoy like having someone explain how to do an exercise properly. You know, technique and form is so important in injury prevention. And if someone has never lifted weights or participated in an exercise program, that's a great place to start with a trainer. It's also a motivational aspect to personal training in that they need that accountability or the motivation help, and a trainer can provide a lot of that.
So really a very well-educated exercise partner basically is what a personal trainer can be for you.
Oh, definitely. They can be your accountability buddy. I have my clients text me that they got their workout in or their fitness homework that I may have given them on the days that I'm not meeting with them. It's a great accountability tool. We all need a little support and motivation in exercise. It doesn't matter if you're an elite athlete. Having a coach on your side makes a big difference.
And, you know, I mentioned, the group exercise program and personal fitness, but what about some of the other benefits of exercise in terms of improving sleep, improving, mood, and does it even improve, relationship skills and overall quality of life?
Oh, definitely. Exercise can improve the quality of life. Not only does it ward off disease and health conditions, high blood pressure and things like that, but your mood, it's been noted in scientific evidence that it helps with depression, self-confidence, self-esteem. You know, when you need to let off a little stress from a hard day, if you exercise, that's going to improve your mood, and in turn, you can enjoy the rest of your day. Sleep, you sleep deeper and usually better when you've exercised. There's so many realms of your life that can be affected by exercise, and overall it improves the quality of our life, and that to me is one of the main reasons I enjoy exercise, in that it makes me feel good about myself. And today I think we all need a little shot in the arm, a self-confidence, to feel good about ourselves, and exercise can provide that.
And also they're, the body's own hormones that, improve the sense of well-being. They're called the endorphins that are known to increase with exercise as well. So some people are morning exercise people and some people are evening exercise people. How do we know what's best for us?
What's best is that you just exercise. More importantly than maybe when you exercise, because if you don't exercise, you're not getting it done. So the time of day doesn't matter. But everybody has a different body clock. My husband loves to exercise early in the morning, say 5:30 in the morning. I'm kind of more like mid-morning. Some people really like it after work, or lunchtime is a good time to use your lunch hour to be time efficient to exercise. So I think that's a personal decision that works with their body clock.
A number of sleep specialists will actually caution against exercising late in the day because of the problems with sleep. Do you find that to be true?
It can be. If you exercise really late at night, prior to going to bed, it actually kind of can rev you up. So you want to make sure when you exercise in the evening that you give yourself enough time to actually calm down, relax, so that you can go to sleep easily.
This is a special edition of Health Matters on Red River Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Randall Brewer. Our topic tonight is diet and exercise during the holidays. Hope everyone is having a nice holiday season so far. Our guest tonight, Jennifer Utley, clinical dietitian with the Willis-Knighton Health System, and Libby Burkhalter, personal fitness trainer and group exercise specialist as well. Libby, when we talk about, having a lot of food choices during the holidays, obviously that needs to translate over into the rest of the year as well. What are the best recommendations that you see coming from, your clinical experience in terms of making wise food choices during a busy week? Because many of us, we work long hours, we may not have more than 5 or 10 minutes to eat, and it's easy to grab those high-density calories when we don't have much time. How do we avoid that?
It's all about planning. We have to plan to be able to succeed in our goals, our nutrition goals, well, really any goal in life. But when we are so busy working, however many hours per day, our commute, at the end of the day, if you haven't planned, it's just so much easier to drive through fast food and pick something up. So if you can plan maybe one day out of the week, plan a meal or a menu for the rest of the week, maybe some some simple options for breakfast, or, you know, if you're not a morning person, just to grab like Fiber One bar, apples, something like that, that's quick and easy. You can kind of eat it maybe on the commute, or, you know, if you're trying to watch your budget, maybe seeing what's on sale. If chicken's on sale, maybe planning your week of menus around chicken, a chicken dish, and maybe having those everything kind of pre-cooked and then putting it together easily during the day, so it is kind of quick and easy. Another thing I like to do, since I do live, well, I do live with my mother, but it's kind of like I live alone, is just to cook in large batches, so you can put the rest in the freezer, defrost it, and that's a quick meal that you can have for lunch or for supper the next day.
So obviously diet and exercise are very, very important, but we tend to, you know, put them down the list in terms of our priorities if we don't watch out. It sounds like it's very easy to do. Libby, we had a question submitted regarding our discussion about a personal trainer. How hard is it to find a personal trainer, and can it be done inexpensively?
You can definitely find a good personal trainer. You can go online, and I would go through an accredited program. ACE or IDEA will list in your local area personal trainers that are certified. You want to make sure that they are certified trainers with an accredited organization, and IDEA and ACE are great organizations to get recommendations from.
And ACE, what is that organization?
That's the American Council on Exercise.
And they have a website that
they
you
do.
Can
they
go
have
to? And
ACE.org or acefitness.org.
Okay, acefitness.org. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. When we're reaching for those high-density calories and we find ourselves, you know, in a situation where we want to avoid doing that again, Jenny, what sort of behavioral modifications should we make? I know a number of people will fall victim to, you know, going through that same fast food line, you know, just when they're in a difficult position, or, you know, going down that same aisle in the grocery store and making those bad choices. How do we change those behavioral patterns? What can people do to get out of those ruts, so to speak?
Well, first taking a look at what you actually do, because sometimes we can kind of be blinded to our own choices and say, well, how did I gain all this weight? I only eat this little, but we don't realize all the little sips and dips of different things that we do consume. So that's when food journaling really comes in handy. You can look and see when you eat it, what you eat, what were you feeling at the time, because we do tend to eat emotionally if we're bored or lonely. So getting that all on a piece of paper so that later you can objectively look at it and say, okay, this is my issue. It's on Thursday nights when I'm at the house by myself. I tend to go through Taco Bell or something. And then that's when you can say, well, on Thursday, let me find an activity, a hobby, do something to occupy my time, or maybe plan ahead and plan your menu. If you're grocery shopping, of course, using the perimeter of the store to get more of the whole foods, the healthier foods, not the less processed foods, because of course that's going to be the best bet. The convenience foods tend to be higher in fats, sodium, different things, and they can be, I mean, there's a lot of people, if they have issues with financial issues, it can be easy just to grab, you know, ramen noodles or something very inexpensive. But, you know, that is your health. And there are a lot of inexpensive, healthy food items like beans and rice or apples, cabbage, different things. Canned tuna can be very healthy, and inexpensive eggs. so choosing those whole foods that are healthier and then planning ahead so you can have those options when you're ready for them.
You know, you mentioned something that triggered, reminded me of something I wanted to ask you earlier, you know, being bored or lonely, late night snacks, that can be a problem.
It can. You know, if you're not eating maybe a whole lot at supper, you may get hungry in the evening and want a snack, or you may be lonely and want a snack. There's a lot of options that you can do. A lot of people will stay away from fatty foods because it's bad for us. But nuts are very high in fat, and if you just take a handful of them, they have the good fat, and they keep us very full. So it can be satisfying to just grab some of that. You know,
a peanut butter, half of maybe a little peanut butter on a piece of bread or something, an apple, something to kind of keep us full and we still get that satisfaction of eating something. We do tend to eat when we're bored or lonely, so, you know, trying to find another option instead of that. But late night snacks can be, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that if it's something that you truly need.
You know, because there is quite a bit of talk about, you know, not eating late at night, and that's a source of weight gain. Is that a myth? Are calories calories, or does it really matter when they go in?
Right. Well, I think that kind of came about because at night we do tend to kind of eat those bad foods or those forbidden foods, maybe that get half a gallon of ice cream in our freezer that we've been thinking about all day. But in reality, our body will digest and absorb all of our nutrients, whether it's 8 in the morning or 10 at night, the same way. So it's kind of, it won't, if you're eating a balanced diet and the right amount of calories for you, if you're also having that snack at midnight and that fits into your plan, it won't necessarily mean you're going to gain weight. But if you are at night eating a high-fat, high-calorie meal in addition to your regular diet, then, of course, that may kind of keep on the pounds.
And I guess maybe doing a diary, you know, journaling about our eating habits and our exercise habits could identify maybe some of those problem areas, Libby?
Oh, definitely. I think food journaling is really important to keep up account on your nutrition and what you're doing. And maybe it'll help you point out some areas that you're struggling with, if it's late night snacking, or maybe you need a midday snack. I kind of recommend having a morning and afternoon snack between meals, as long as it's the right portion control and it's the right combination of carbohydrates or protein, what you need for your activity, then it's good to have a snack to help you kind of get from one thing to the next, because you may be hungry in the afternoon and that will set you up for maybe overeating later in the evening if you didn't get enough calories during the day.
And in terms of, you know, eating for maybe stress management and being bored and things along those lines, how could we replace some of those habits with maybe some healthier habits like exercise?
Oh, definitely. I think a lot of us stress eat or emotionally, you know, we eat. So instead of reaching for the ice cream or the unhealthy snack or food, maybe you should read a book, take a walk, you know, get outside, call a friend, see if they want to go exercise with you. It doesn't have to be full on out workout, but it could just be a distraction so that you get out of the kitchen, you close the refrigerator, and you move on to something else, doing a little behavior modification.
This is a special edition of Health Matters on Red River Radio. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer. Our guests tonight are Libby Burkhalter, personal fitness trainer and group exercise specialist, and Jennifer Utley, a clinical dietitian here in Shreveport with the Willis-Knighton Health System. We hope you're all having a happy and healthy exercise and calorie-restrained period. Libby, I know a number of people who may try exercise and fail, or maybe they've been on a diet and they didn't lose the weight that they wanted to, and it can be really discouraging. How do we avoid that negative self-talk that comes from that?
Well, you know, I think we all have to work on that a little bit, to start with a positive mindset. And how you talk to yourself really sets you up for failure or being successful in your exercise or nutrition program. And so listen to how you talk to yourself. Are you constantly cutting yourself down? Are you looking in the mirror and saying, I hate this, or I don't like the way this looks? Instead of reverse that and start out with a positive affirmation daily. I love my body. You know, your body is the only place you have to live, so you better start loving it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean we have to be perfect. It just means we're striving for progress, not perfection. And so I really encourage a lot of my clients to do daily affirmations, to read positive things that are going to, you know, help incorporate that mindset, and surround themselves with positive people so that they are encouraged and supported to get to the exercise, you know, get it done, to eat healthy. And once they start that, they notice how much better that they feel. When they fuel their body properly, they're going to feel so much better physically. And it's just like fueling your body is like putting the right gas in the car. You've got to feed yourself right and believe in yourself so that you can live a healthy lifestyle.
Very well said. Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or a health professional. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Sound engineering by Kermit Poling tonight. Also would like to thank Libby Burkhalter, personal exercise fitness trainer and group exercise specialist, and Jennifer Utley, clinical dietitian here, Willis-Knighton Healthcare System here in Shreveport. Support for this program comes from the Noel Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters as we discuss upper respiratory disorders in children. My guest will be Dr. Brett Coder with the Arklatex Ear, Nose, and Throat, and Dr. Stephen Bienvenu with the Louisiana State University School of Medicine, Department of Pediatrics here in Shreveport. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and thank you so much for joining us again this evening.